"I can answer," Sansa said quickly to quell her prince's anger. She smiled at the Green Knight. "Your helmet bears golden antlers, my lord. The stag is the sigil of the royal house. King Robert has two brothers. By your extreme youth, you can only be Renly Baratheon, Lord of Storm's End and counselor to the king, and so I name you." Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
Classic deep cuts from the beginning of Game of Thrones. I like it.
Yeah.
God,
yeah.
You're such a nerd.
I am a giant nerd, yes. Thank you, Aaron.
Social justice nerd.
You were calling me a social justice vigilante yesterday. So.
Yeah, Keb, you correctly decided that was Keb.
Yes, she does the hard work. Anyway.
So you're more like a social justice janitor? You just come through and sweep things up afterward?
Yeah, that is actually, generally speaking,
He's a social justice nerd. He has, like, fake glasses. Or a social justice hipster, even better. He pushes his glasses up.
I don't have fake glasses. I am blind.
His fake glasses with no lens. He pushes them up. He pushes them up and goes, well, actually.
I do the actually thing, but I do not push my glasses up, and I do actually need glasses. I am blind as fuck without them. My driver's license says so.
Wouldn't that be more of a geek than a nerd?
So you're saying
I
Roy
think
isn't
so.
Smart?
Yeah.
Well,
aren't
I mean,
the
that's
geeks
true.
The like really focused in on something. People.
I think these terms they have been so detethered from any sort of consistent sense that you can call people whatever you want.
Well, I would social say justice warrior that you can call anybody whatever you want.
Yes,
and they can call themselves whatever they want.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. That's better.
Hmm. Well, welcome back, listeners, to a podcast that we are calling the White Book Podcast. And
such
this
white
week,
knights.
Yeah, we're all white knights.
The easiest way to make Will angry.
Wait, what is the easiest way to make me angry?
Call you a white knight.
I mean, it's annoying, but no, the easiest way to make me angry is to drive like a jackass.
Huh. Well, no, it's much easier for me to call you White Knight. I'm not going to Missouri to drive like a jackass to annoy you.
Yeah, I mean, you're from New York. Do you even have a driver's license?
I mean, yes, but...
Okay, just checking.
Whenever I drive anywhere that's not New York, everyone's like, oh my god, you're so aggressive. I'm like, really? I'm really just medium aggressive here.
New Yorkers do have a special type of aggressiveness that's matched only by New Englanders, particularly from those from Massachusetts.
Massholes.
There's a really specific form of like driving aggression from like in my experience of drivers from Michigan, and like not in the same type of aggressiveness that y'all are referring to, but it's just like whatever the speed limit is, like they just go 80.
Yeah, I've seen that. Actually, Texas does the same thing, except it's 85. But yeah,
it's like school zone. No shit's given. Let's go.
Well, those kids,
and they like U-turns.
Oh,
okay. We're wildly off topic.
Did any of us introduce ourselves?
I was trying.
Do we have to?
This is what got way off topic.
Yeah, this is what happens when you break our rules.
What I was gonna do is let listeners know this is the first podcast
with our new team rotation. Now that we're getting things going, this is Team Honor, if I remember correctly. Right? Listeners, I'm sure some of you are confused because I don't think I did a great job of clarifying last week that Aaron is still going to be joining us for review episodes.
And if there's something interesting.
Yeah, guess what we have this week? A chapter pack review.
Quite impressive.
So the rest of the hosts, then, obviously I'm Will, and we just did enough introducing of Aaron. Who else is here with us?
Roy is.
And Luke.
All right, I think that is a team. Woo, boy.
Woo.
Okay, well, I think we're going to get cracking on the chapter pack review. I know we've got some time constraints on our side, and it's always good to move through that as quick as we can. To do so, we're going to go ahead and continue utilizing our newer chapter pack review format, where we're going to read all the cards for a house together and then kind of talk about what changes for that house as a whole and rate them as a whole rather than going back and forth on every individual card. It seems to keep the conversation rolling a little better. So let's go ahead and kick over to that gear. But listeners, stay tuned. We've got some nice announcements and things coming up after the break, which is the review.
The review is a break?
Yeah, it's
you
like
know,
when
I don't know. It's one of those phrases.
So
it's
like
the music transition.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So you shouldn't mute. Like, you know, during the break, I just mute the television or I mute my computer. Don't do that during the review. Okay, so the first card is Sir Edmure Tully. He is a unique character, 5 cost. Surprising no one, he's a military in power, Bicon, 4 strength, non-loyal. He is House Tully and a knight. And he has the reaction, after a character gains power, move 1 power from that character to a House Tully character. Limit once per round. And then we have a unique location, 3 cost, Bear Island. It is loyal, Stark, the North. Trait and reaction after you marshal loyal card, gain 1 gold, limit twice per phase. These cards are nutso, like super nutso. Like, wow.
Every time Roy says, like, take a shot.
Yeah, ding. That's definitely one of these.
I will play along on the cast.
We're supposed to get drunk. We're doing Second Sons live right after this, and Roy has to be drunk for it.
Oh my god, that's fantastic. I'm totally going to be in the chat for that.
You better get to work.
Yeah, you definitely better get to work, because I'm more tired than I am drunk at the moment. But anyway.
I'm tired of cards like Edmure Tully and Stark. That's how you transition like a professional, boys. Bear Island. Since when does Stark have great economy? Isn't the whole point of, or one of the main points of Stark from a Nedley perspective, that, like, they don't have that great economic base? They're in the north, they're kind of barren. Why are they such a great economy house? Because Bear Island is an insanely good card.
Well, especially Bear Island in particular, right? Like, Bear Island is, like, very barren.
It's a one...
I mean, that's how Jorah got exiled, right? He needed resources and money to keep his wife in all her finery, right? And he started sleeping.
Yeah. And he gains gold by being disloyal, not marshaling loyal cards.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bear Island also is 1 gold in a fealty deck, which is fucking absurd. Because you get the gold when you play it, because it can
be
off itself, and then you're kneeling your house card, I'd assume, to pay for it, and now you've just paid 1 gold for what's up to 2 extra gold per turn, and it's almost always going to be 1 extra gold per turn.
Yeah, and if you've got the other card, you can still trigger it that same turn, right?
Then it's
twice,
free.
So it could effectively be free turn 1.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, and I think Edmure looks great, too. Like, Stark got fantastic cards.
Edmure is just nuts.
He's so frustrating.
Edmure is insane.
He pushes Stark Stall, and he pushes Stark Rush. and he pushes like every Stark theme. Like I don't understand why. And he's a good 5-cost immune to, you know, ward shenanigans cost spot. So I don't know why a Stark deck wouldn't run at least one Edmure until he rotates out.
Because some people are bad at thrones.
Okay. Well, also true. But yeah, he's a crazy twist on the type of thing that we used to see on it was Alaria Sand, I think, in first edition out of Martell. But this is a very strong ability, moving any power from any character to a House Tully. It doesn't even have to be to Edmure, depending on what your situation is. Well, maybe,
strength boost for Catelyn. Strength boost for Catelyn, too.
River Run means it becomes two, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Wait,
put it on either count.
Wait, does River Run say gain specifically? Because I don't know if moving a power counts as gain. Gained or moved? Wow, that's
worded to work with Edmure.
It's Jesus. Specifically designed to synergize with
See, Edmure. this is how little I play Stark, so.
Yeah, well, you're going to be playing against a lot of it with cards like this. So.
Yeah, and this is going to be so crazy in Melee. Like, Stark I'd already thought was like neck and neck for the best Melee house at this point, but like, this pack, I think, puts them over the top, right?
You don't even have to move it to your own House Tully character. You could move it to someone else's House Tully character, and like, because that character's going to like die to Tears of Lys or something. Because it's a fun card. It's a really annoying card to play against, but he's also a fun.
Yeah, he's incredible.
I don't think he's fun at all. There's almost no interaction with him. All you can really do is choose not to gain power as characters. There's no other real way to stop that.
Which, by the way, you can do in second edition.
Yeah.
You don't have to claim Renown.
It's optional.
Yeah.
Renown.
But it's a shitty option that makes games more boring, not less.
Well, what are you going to do? You're going to, like, use your targeted removal or your control effects on Edmure, like, rather than all the other amazing cost-efficient bodies that Stark just, like, throws down on the board every turn.
To make it worse, getting any target removal through on Stark is the single hardest thing in the game, right?
Right, that's what I was going to say. And a Tears of Lys that Edmure is eating is a Tears of Lys that Eddard or Rob are not.
Exactly, my point exactly, yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah, so Stark gets an S ranking for this chapter pack.
Indeed.
I agree. This is another one that's not quite like a game changer. This doesn't give you a new build out of Stark, but it just amps everything they're doing up to 11.
Yep. You know what Edmure is not good against, thankfully? The only thing he's not good against?
Martell?
He's okay against Martell.
The Mountain?
Night's Watch defense.
Yeah.
We'll be getting to that in a second.
Yeah.
So Tyrell cards then? Or because does everyone agree S rank?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm willing to do the Tyrell cards. They are my surprise.
Yeah, and me too. Go ahead, Will.
Okay. So first up, we have Renly Baratheon, who is a unique and loyal card. 7 cost, 6 strength, and all 3 icons. He's a king and a lord, and he has both insight and renown. And while an opponent controls a king character, Renly Baratheon cannot be saved. And then reaction, when you draw a loyal card using insight, reveal it to draw an additional card. Then we have Crown of Golden Roses. Sorry. 1 cost, unique attachment, crown and item, lord or lady character only. Attached character gains the king trait. And action, discard 1 card from your hand to give attached character plus X strength until the end of the phase. X is equal to the number of challenge icons on attached character. Limit twice per round. I've got to say, Renly looks pretty sweet. A tricon at 6 strength with renown, let alone dropping insight on top of that. This might be the type of piece that we have really been waiting for in Baratheon, in Tyrell. Crown of Golden Roses, I'm not super sold on at the moment. It's a more conditional, kind of weakened version of Heartsbane. maybe if I just need an extra copy of Heartsbane in the deck for some reason, but Renly's really where it's at here. I don't know how big the King stuff in general is going to get, but even if your opponent does have a King and you can't save Renly, I think the trade-off here is worth it.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Like, well, drink, because I just said like. But Renly is definitely the kind of impactful card that Tyrell's looking for in a character form. And I think this, alongside Averroes Agenda, which was spoiled for the Alliance box that we'll be getting soon, really just puts Tyrell in a really strong position to take advantage of sort of the shell that it had out of the core set in the first cycle. But, you know, it could draw cards, it could pump its character strength. But besides Randall and the Knight of Flowers, it didn't really have any strong characters. And if something bad happened to one of those, and in a second edition game, something bad is going to happen to at least one of your good characters, you don't have any redundancy. But this is the moving towards impactful redundancy in Tyrell, and I think it's just what it needed.
I'm really pumped. I'm really pumped about both of these cards, actually. I think I'm a little higher on Crown of Golden Roses than you are, Will. I like the fact that when I play Tyrell, I've got a ton of extra cards in hand, generally speaking, and being able to ditch them to be able to force through challenges with, you know, things like the Mander to be able to replenish that card that I just ditched, and other effects are going to be amazing. And I really love the idea of, and design team, if there's any of you paying attention, I really love the idea of Tyrell, sort of like having a dumpster diving deck where they can just like fill their hand up with cards and have to ditch them at the end of the round and then like be able to search through their discard pile and like put them back into play. I just would think that that would be amazing. So think about that. But the strength matters thing that was in the core set is finally getting enhanced. This is the first strength pump that we've seen since the core set, which was supposed to be the, in my opinion, like one of the themes that Tyrell was pushing. And Renly, there's no reason not to play Renly, even if your opponent's running a King character. We've already talked about Kings of Summer being a really strong agenda, and if you want to double up on Close Call just to, you know, give yourself an insurance policy, you get an additional draw. Yeah, I mean, he's awesome. I'm just very excited because Tyrell has definitely become my faction of choice here in the last few months.
Okay, wait a minute. I've got a question for you then about Crown of Golden Roses. Well, a couple things. I am excited for strength mattering in Tyrell to finally be utilized somehow. I'm not really sure this does it, but I'm just curious. Would you play Widow's Wail in a deck if it did not have ambush? If it just said one gold, attached character gets plus two strength. I'm just curious. I don't feel like most people would, and Crown of Golden Roses is strictly worse than that.
I wouldn't say it's strictly worse. I mean, the passive strength boost is always good, but the fact that it is an action and there is some challenge manipulation there that like your opponent does have to consider something or other in order to make it matter. And sticking this on Randall is potentially repeatable stand if you don't want to rely on Marge. I don't know. I think that card is like a solid one of if you're really deciding to go for that Tyrell offensive build. Because we're seeing two divergent deck types for Tyrell, like in terms of the rush with the knights and the big guys and baiting them into a reset. And I think that this gives you just a little bit more of an opportunity to interact with your opponent, which is what we've been complaining about for a long time, is that other than, like, Marin Heat and the House Florent Knight, Tyrell just didn't Tyrell just didn't interact with an opponent's board whatsoever. And while this is a little bit indirect, one copy of this in a deck is not going to make me sad.
It also...
Wait, look at it this way. Because you're running one Heartsbane as a general rule if you're running that type of Tyrell deck. You don't really want to run two Heartsbane because you don't want to run into a dead dupe. But you can run one Crown of Golden Roses and one Heartsbane for redundancy without worrying about that dead dupe, without worrying about getting that extra card you just don't care about.
That's absolutely correct. And it definitely is a card that encourages you to want to run the Mander and some of those more Strength Matters cards. And so if Tyrell gets another card like Randall in a future cycle or in this cycle or in the Lanny box, this kind of effect, having some more redundancy, is going to be really valuable. I'd say right now, I agree with Aaron and Luke that it's like a one of for that kind of redundant, sort of as a second Heartsbane of a sect, you know, one strength less, I guess, than Heartsbane, which is, I think, plus three. And it lasts until the end of the phase, right? After you discard, end of the phase.
And it's
which makes it stronger than
twice
than
per round, too.
It's also like. So. A lot of people are starting to like
guys. Yeah. No one cares about this card anymore, and we're burying the lead. Renly is right here, and we've been talking about this card for 10 minutes.
I was defending it.
That's fine, but like everyone listening right now is like, Renly, are you going to talk about Renly?
He's awesome.
All right. Well. Okay. Not to step on Will's toes, but Aaron, like, I'm going to ask you specifically, like, people, the reaction to Renly was initially, this is the bomb that was promised. Like, that's sort of the line, like, Patrick was pushing.
Yeah.
But there was then this counter reaction that Renly is actually a bad card. So what do you say about that?
He's the fourth best 7 coster in the game right now. He's not as good as Tywin, Robert, or Miri. And then there's Renly. There's no other 7 coster that's as good as he is.
Wait a minute. So you are counting Renly above the mountain? Above Sir Vigor. Yeah. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, with Martell every fucking where right now, yes.
That's fair. He does cause a bit of a nightmare for Martell in that he has three icons.
And the mountain.
That's a lot of attachments.
And the mountain's really just like a 7 gold iron thrown against Martell. So when you combine those two things, I think Renly is better, yes. Renly's also generally, he's both easier and harder to kill, right? Like, your bodyguards are less safe on him, but he's probably not going to die to tears, so on and so forth. I think he's fantastic. I like the draw. I don't love the draw. The draw is nice. Just having a 7-for-6 renowned body is humongous. And he even goes a little bit of a way toward making things like the Queen of Thorns better, which is nice. She wants more draw. She wants Yeah, all that stuff. He's just... Everything Tyrell wants, he does. And especially with Alvaro's agenda, he's an incredible guard.
Why in particular with Reigns of Castamere?
Because a 7-for-6 with an intrigue icon is something... Tyrell needs big strength intrigue if they're going to make that agenda really sing. And he's the best strength intrigue that they have by, I think, is...
By one string.
Queen of Thorns is 5?
Queen of Thorns is 5.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. For the same cost.
So annoying that she's 5.
Yeah, well, that's fine. So she's 5, he's 7 and better. And then you have all these different things you're combining to really make that work. Remember, like, while Tyrell does love that their strength boosts, they're going to have to use a lot of strength boosts to win Intrigue by 5 without Renly or the Queen of Thorns. Because they don't have anyone else that can really do that alone.
I agree.
Absolutely. So, Night's Watch, that's you, Luke.
Wait. We do need to give Tyrell a general rating out of this. It's a little tricky since I'm kind of looking at their overall picture. I think this is a very solid boost to their faction as a whole. So, I don't know. Just out of this pack, I'm going to give him a B+, though impact in the wider meta may be a different letter for that house.
I was going to go A-, and I'm going to stick A-. I think Renly is probably an A card. He's a downside from an A+. And the Crown of Golden Roses, I think, is going to be just way better than people are expecting.
I agree with the A-.
I think it's a solid A. I think that both of these cards see play in every Tyrell main house deck, unless we get something really goofy coming down the pipe until they rotate out.
Is Golden Roses loyal?
No, it's not.
It also doesn't require Tyrell characters.
Yeah, yeah. I got that when we read it the first time. I just wasn't sure about the loyalty. I don't remember hearing it. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that makes it better in its role banner, but it's at least worth paying attention to. I mean, looks good on Balon.
Yeah, that was my first thought.
Oh, God.
Alright. Night's Watch, somebody.
Oh, I'm up for Night's Watch. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, hey, we actually have these in English. We have, first we have Thorin Smallwood. He's a unique Night's Watch character, non-loyal, 4 cost, with a military icon and 4 strength. He has the Ranger trait. No attachments except weapon. Reaction. After you win a challenge as the defending player, gain 1 power for your faction. And then we have the much ballyhooed event, Night Gathers, which is a Night's Watch loyal event, 1 cost. And it says marshaling action. Choose an opponent whose reserve value is lower than yours. Until the end of the phase, you may marshal characters from that player's discard pile as if they were in your hand.
Man, Night Gathers is going to be fucking stupid in Tomas's deck.
Oh boy, I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, until it's the only deck anyone plays. Is Night Gathers loyal?
It is loyal, yes. Yeah. Okay. So you have to run Night's Watch main.
Good.
A mirror matches would be kind of miserable. And like,
I mean,
unless you're
running 2 counting coppers, right?
Yeah, counting coppers. But then also, like, you also got to think about like what's coming down the pipe next pack, right? I mean, like, I hear that Valor Morghulis is a card. Well, so
this only marshals from the discard pile,
right?
Right, but I'm just saying, like, if somebody goes, "Oh crap, my board state's getting away from me," like, I at least have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do I talk about Night's Watch or do we all talk about it? I don't remember.
You have the first poll because you just...
Yeah. Okay, like, I haven't been on a review episode since, like...
Since before the format changed?
Well, yeah. Well, because I complained about being on review episodes every time I was on the cast. Okay, so...
There's just no pleasing you, Luke.
Yeah, I know. I'm the worst. So Thorin Smallwood is a really nice card. It's not an icon that Night's Watch needs, but it's power gain that they want, so that's fine. The no attachments except weapon is actually kind of cool. He's 4 costs, can't be warded. Yeah, he's really solid. He's got a favorable trait in Night's Watch right now. I think that's the trait that we definitely see the most of at the moment, which... I'm just really excited for that one search event to actually become a staple in Night's Watch decks when we have enough.
In Tomas's deck.
Yeah, like, I want it to be a staple, like, in all of the wall decks, like, where they're running a wall defense deck that's, like, specifically focused on, you know, 1 or 2 traits, and they're just looking for that one thing they need. Like, I don't know. I think that Night's Watch is getting really scary, and I'm worried about it. But Night Gathers is just... amazing. Like, what an annoying card, right?
Yeah.
Like,
sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, I mean, like, well, there's so many effects that that you didn't worry about before that now you might, like, because the Yorin decks weren't nearly as popular after first Snow, and then with the, like, hyper-aggressive landing builds and that sort of thing. And now you've got to worry about Yorin stealing one and then dropping a Night Gathers with some additional economy with those Rangers that ditch a card. Like, I mean, I think that, like, I think this card is potentially just a nightmare. I mean, because it just, your cost curve is totally at the mercy of the other person's deck. Like, if any effect puts a smaller character in the discard pile, then they're now defending the wall. It's awesome.
It's a super cool, like, Nedley sort of nod, though, too, isn't it? Like, the Night's Watch are, like, your resources are theirs. They must subsist on, like what you can provide for them.
Absolutely. I also, and Aaron may disagree with me, but I think this is actually a really well-designed card because I think it both pushes Jamie decks, like I think it brings back the kind of decks that were sort of pioneered by Dan Struhall and perfected by Jeremy Hammond, and then he had success earlier, the sort of Yoren decks that Luke alluded to. It gives some redundancy, it gives flexibility, it gives actually a bigger swing to those kind of Jamie decks, but also it's a big Shaga card. Like, it's an exciting card that makes...
Oh, yeah.
Players want to build massive combo decks kind of things. And it is, as you said, Will, Nedley as well. So I think this is actually, it is exactly the kind of card that Danny and Nate should be designing because it actually speaks to all three of their different player types. So I'm actually just really impressed with this card. Smallwood, on the other hand, I'm a little bit more, I think he's a very strong card. Like Luke said, I'm a little bit more disappointed in him in the sense, particularly because he's non-loyal, which sort of pushes Night's Watch defense even more into sort of a bannerable thing to get, and particularly power gain as being more bannerable, I just really don't like. I prefer that most of the good defense cards remain loyal, but that's just a sort of a design thing that I have, so I don't know. These are both very strong cards. Ninth Gathers is probably one of the best designed cards in the pack, even if it's not necessarily the most impactful. And Thorin is just a good card. So, Night's Watch players, Joe, should be very happy with this pack, which I think they've been happy with every single pack so far this cycle.
Yeah, they've been getting very solid stuff here. And the one thing about Thorin that I don't think we really emphasized for listeners, maybe as much as I was interested in, is that, sorry, I guess it's two connected things, is that he doesn't have to be in the challenge that you win on defense, and there's no limit to it. Now, that's a lot to necessarily win all three rather than just not letting them go unopposed. But, I mean, that is pretty broad-reaching ability there.
I just hope that they never print a weapon that gives Night's Watch characters icons. Because, like, we have the Practice Blade, right? That gives attached character a military icon.
Right.
I that would be the biggest mistake.
Aaron?
I don't know. Night's Watch gets good cards. I don't like the stupid event. I think that it's the kind of card that seems innocuous until it's completely broken. It's always good. And, like, if economy ever stops totally, like, dominating the game, and Valor really makes intrigue good, then this card just becomes completely silly very, very quickly. And the other card's a card you stick a one of in a deck, and you're just happy when you see it. So, yeah, Night's Watch continues to just get really, really good stuff. I don't know what there is to say. Like, Night's Watch is almost boring with the, like, sheer efficiency they're getting this cycle. It's like, hey, guess what? More good, efficient cards.
Says the Lannister cast.
Yeah. I don't play all that much anymore, so I don't know if I'm still a Lannister player.
You're still a Lannister player, Aaron. All right. Does that bring it around to me to do the Bear cards?
We didn't rate.
Oh, we need to rate.
We're doing rating.
I don't know how this works. I don't see how this isn't, like, I think this is a definition of an A-. Like, I just think that both these cards go into decks, and they go into a lot of different types of decks, and yeah, I'm never sad to see either one of these cards. A-.
Yeah, I think an A- sounds about right.
Ditto.
Yeah, I think that sounds pretty good to me as well. Just very efficient. There may be a time that I am not happy to see Night Gathers if my opponent has more reserve than me, but I am happy to see more card effects actually referencing reserve values and trying to integrate it more into the game rather than just this cap that we have at the end of each round.
That may be a topic for another episode, because I think I disagree, but let's move on to the next house.
Okay.
The Stag. So these are the Bear cards. The first one is a Shy Priestess. It is a non-loyal, 3-cost, 3-strength monocon. It just has an intrigue icon. Its traits are ally and relore. It has reaction. After you marshal Shy Priestess, choose a Neela character with strength 2 or lower. And then we have a loyal, 0-cost attachment visited by shadows. It's a condition. Opponent's character only. And attached character gets -1 strength. A lot of Bera since the core set. There's one pretty good to good card, which is the Priestess, because the Priestess just means more redundancy, both for, in many ways, actually Banner of the Stag likes this more than, I'd say, Bera Fealty, but obviously Bera Fealty is going to like it a lot. Just more redundancy. It's a double Neo card, particularly against a deck that's focused on weenies. It's just making Bera Neo stronger, which I actually think probably is good. It might bring some Bera back more forcefully into the meta. I know it sort of keeps its, you know, sort of under the radar. It remains a very strong faction and a very strong, it doesn't sort of get the kind of flair that Martell and Stark and Lannister have gotten in the sort of the tournament scene, but it remains a consistently solid faction. Visited by Shadows is kind of a terrible card. I don't understand why it's loyal except to keep it away from Targaryen, which I think is kind of a shame. Other than that, I don't know. It's a waste of a theme. It's a waste of a Nedley card. One of the most memorable thing. It represents one of the more memorable things that happens in Clash of Kings, and it's kind of a fucking terrible card. Pardon my French. So I'd say Bera, you know, is just kind of that mixed bag that it's been getting since the first cycle. One solid card that continues to push what Bera wants to do, and one terrible card.
A million years ago, before Roy was a regular on this cast, we reviewed the core set, and I said I think they probably hit nearly a critical mass for allure cards, and it's going to be a really long time before we see useful allure cards again. And Will, and I believe Tommy, yelled at me for like 15 minutes. Will, Tommy, whoa, fuck you. In the meantime,
No. I like, would have to go back and listen more to it again, but I'm betting what I said is that I agree with you, but I think that's pretty disappointing because I want allure cards.
Because Melisandre's limit once per phase, you don't expect... Yeah, there was a whole thing. A Shy Priestess is fucking incredible and probably shouldn't have been printed. Like, I'm not against powerful cards, as you hopefully know by now. I'm against cards that don't let you do things. Like, I'm not against interacting with opponents. I'm not against control. It's just, like, Bera seems to be getting a lot of samey shit. They've been developing dominance, and now we're back to Neil again, and it's just like, can we do anything else, really? And yeah, I don't really care that the other card exists, so I'm going to ignore it.
Oh, man. I do have to say, I'm very excited about this. This is the first Baratheon card I've seen in a long time that's just straight up made me excited. And that's, I'm sure, carryover from being a Lannister Neil player in first edition, but
i.e. a bad prospect person.
Do what?
I.e. a bad person.
Exactly. And this just fits right into that niche. Getting a couple Neils out of it, assuming you have Melisandre on the board when you play her, having the better redundancy and being able to play Scene in the Flames, pumping Robert more if you're getting two Neils out of this. Like, oh, there's so much to love. Visited by Shadows, on the other hand, I mean, on the one hand, I love the kind of historical nod to the Westeros edition.
Yes, I was. Damn it, I was gonna say that.
Yeah,
I still have a copy of it.
Yes, and at the time, like, that made sense for listeners. Brief history lesson: Bera had a light burn theme, negative strength thing in the CCG. It was tied into the shadow magic. And it generally just discarded characters rather than killing like Tyrell did. And I thought, you know, that was a nice way to kind of represent things, to keep it separate. Not only did it sort of fit for some of the Assassin-y stuff, I thought, but it also made for a nice Nedley nod to the family ties that the Baratheons have to the Targaryens. So, you know, they kind of got this diluted form of burn. That's not the case in second edition, though. This card has no home here. It would have been, I think, very interesting in Targaryen. It might have even been interesting in Tyrell, at least this effect. Obviously, it couldn't have been this name and theme. But would have given them a different way to kind of fiddle with some of the strength matters stuff. But this is just terrible in Baratheon.
Yeah, but you forget that, that Kingswood exists. It's a card. That exists.
It's a card. It's a card. It's a card I don't mind, but this doesn't help.
Now, visited by Shadows blows. It blows hard. The other card's great. Can we move on?
Is it like trying to get out a birthday cake? Hey, it's not terminal. I bet you we can figure out a use for it if we actually tried. Like Marin Heat. I guess it's not good with Marin Heat. It's anti.
It's okay if you have. If you have multiple copies of Kingswood and King Stannis from the draft packs that we had out.
Why on earth is an opponent's character?
Well, because the one use theoretically could be is it's non-terminal, right? Is that it, since it's zero cost, it's awesome on setup.
Yeah, so we have zero cost attachments. Like,
I mean, really, I agree.
That's the fear.
I agree with you. I'm sure it was... Perhaps the initial version was broken, perhaps not, who knows. But whatever this design that Nate and Danny set on, I think it's a kind of an utterly failed design.
It has to be a nostalgia print. It really does.
So what you're saying is we're blaming
one that doesn't.
Got it.
If they needed a nostalgia print, there was a different one that I admittedly forget the name of now. There was a two-cost attachment, gave the character -2, and then discarded them if they went to zero.
Yeah.
I could see playing that, not this.
Right, you want them to reprint Recruiting Tent, don't you, Will?
Oh, that would be fun.
All right, no one knows what you're talking about, rookery. Old people.
Yeah.
I'm younger than you by several years, Glazer.
I'm the oldest person on the cast. Since Greg went and died of old age.
You're no longer named Glazer, you're named Geezer. You're a fucking geezer.
Dude, that's such a terrible pun. You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's not even a pun. It's just a fact.
It's just a nickname?
It's just a fact.
We are lurching well off topic.
Yeah,
we never do that. Can we give this house a B- and move on?
One
F card.
B-
man.
Good.
I'm willing to push them higher if I'm looking at this as a whole. Visited by Shadows might as well not exist, but I do really think that the Priestess is a big boon for Baratheon. I think I'm willing to give him an A.
I mean, in fairness, because James is going to listen and be pedantic later, I did earlier complain that I wanted different ideas from Baratheon on Dominance and Neil, and then like the card that's a different idea we shit all over. But, you know, different ideas that...
It's a
developed theme that isn't someone else's theme.
This card would be fine if they printed a card that more... I guess the Kingswood is the card that continues this minus strength theme. But for new themes to develop, you want to print a card that showpieces and sets a direction to build around and then build cards to supplement it.
Stannis,
but this doesn't do that.
Stannis.
It sure doesn't.
Cool. Lannister, go.
Whose turn is it?
That's Will.
Ooh, sweet. All right. How did I get both of the houses I love?
Because you claimed them.
Okay. So first up, we have Sir Aemory Lorch. He's a unique non-loyal. 4 cost, 4 strength, military and power. He's a knight. And while an opponent controls 3 or fewer characters, Sir Aemory Lorch gains renown. Then we've got Harrenhal, unique location. 4 gold, contested and stronghold traits, and challenges action. Neil Harrenhal to put a Lannister or House Bolton character from your hand into play. At the end of the phase, if that character is still in play, kill it. Cannot be saved.
Because no one's freaking out about Harrenhal.
Really?
It's a fucking crazy card!
It's stupid. It's stupid.
With everything. Have you seen any
indeed.
Of the jumper decks? It's just... Like, but no one's freaking... How... Okay. Let's start with everything gets, like, a 300-post reply with people freaking out and thinking this guy's falling. Everything. Except this actually broken card. How the fuck does that happen? Like, if you freaked out about... God, what's the most recent card freakout?
I don't know. I feel like things have been pretty dead on that front for a while.
Renly, kind of.
Yeah, okay. If you freaked out about Renly and didn't think Harrenhal was a big deal, you were wrong. If you freaked out about card X and didn't think Harrenhal was a big deal, you were wrong.
I mean, I think Harrenhal is going to be big. I think what is maybe making it fly under some people's radar is the fact that it... possibly. Also, possibly the fact that it kills the character, so like it's less advantageous to just be trying to spam Tywins and such with it as compared to things you might do with some of the discard jump effects.
I mean,
but you're still committing the stuff. Like,
if only Lannister were getting a bunch more cards in a box relatively soon.
Yeah.
Or if only Lannister had another good location that allows you to return characters to your hand.
Yup.
And create the tempo hit against your opponent to return their character to your hand.
I mean, yeah, if, to their if nothing else, I'm running three hounds with this.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous with the hound.
Lenny Wolf with Roose Bolton. Just.
Yeah, I think you're worrying about that a little too much.
I don't think I'm worrying about it. I don't think I'm worrying about it too much in the sense that, like, it doesn't take much extra to just, like, shove that into a deck, right?
Sure it does. Like, because. What other Boltons do we have? Until we get other Boltons.
Agreed.
It's not a worthwhile combo. When we get other Boltons,
You think that we won't?
I mean, they don't actually remember their design decisions. Like, why should we assume that we're getting more Boltons in the next, like, 2 years?
But we've also proven that, like, they don't actually remember the fact that they print, like, insane cards that have ridiculous interactions. And so why wouldn't we get just, like, stupid Bolton things that have come into play effects?
Sure, but to assume that we know either way is just craziness.
For more Bolton cards. Like, if the next cycle, if they continue this, the next cycle is Storm of Swords, and then the cycle after that is Feast for Crows, then Dance of Dragons, you know, is like a year and a half away. So, we already did the Stark Box, and the Stark Box had no Bolton characters. So, 2 years sounds about right for more Bolton characters. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Right.
Yes, but again, this is a fucking ridiculous card. It's not loyal, too, so you could theoretically... And same with Tower of the Hand. Like, there's a lot of synergies, both like that clear combo and a lot of other ones.
Tyrion can bounce folks back, too. The new Tyrion.
I haven't actually seen Jakob's Lanny Winter thing, but I bet you it would love a card like Harrenhal.
The question is, does this rejuvenate the jumpers?
Well, the jumpers, Kings of Winter agenda.
The Kings of Winter isn't. The Kings of Winter. It didn't need the agenda. That was already there. Just people stopped playing it. I told you to play it at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Your play this fucking deck because you were annoying me was a jumper deck that you would have made the cut with.
Well, I mean, that's assuming a lot, but sure.
You would have. You were good with that deck. But it never went anywhere. People just stopped playing it. There was other new hotness, so people played other new hotness. But yeah, the jumper's still there. King's Winter is a fine variant on it. Harrenhal will be a fine variant on it. Alvaro's Agenda will be a fine variant on it. And you can combine various portions of this to make a bunch of different stupid jumper decks that will piss everyone off, which pushes both Stark and Night's Watch up an awful lot.
But we're also ignoring the sheer efficiency of Lorch as well, and he's more renowned than Lannister.
Yeah, he's pretty great, especially with Valor coming.
And in Melee, of course.
Stop talking about Melee like it's a thing.
Somebody's going to have three or fewer characters. So, I mean, unless efficient, if not impressive.
Although we can't 100% trust that wording, since it's a translation. It could be slightly different in the final version. So, The exact Melee interaction might be different.
Yeah. Slight caveat to all of these that we're reading in translation.
I mean, even if he has to attack the opponent that has three or fewer characters, that sounds generally like a win, right?
Yeah. Minister. Okay, so Lanny as a whole, though, I mean, do we give another S in the same pack? I'm tempted to.
Yeah, it's an S.
Yep.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Like, the wow, real question is, wait,
so much.
Hang on, let's, what was in, what was our other S? Our other S was Stark. Is this better than Stark? No, but it's close.
It's close. It pushes.
I don't think Amory is as good as either of the Stark cards.
I agree.
And both of the Stark cards are good.
Yeah, that's the catch. The total, like the average power level of the two individual cards for Stark is higher, but I think Harrenhal's cap is much higher than either of Stark's.
I don't know. Don't forget how important economy is in second edition.
Like that's fair. Though Harrenhal is also an econ card for you, effectively.
Also, I think it's. I don't think we should directly compare the cards. I think what makes them both S's is that they push already pre-existingly strong themes for their respective houses, and or the efficiency of their respective houses really even more into the stratosphere. So the sort of rich are getting richer with these cards.
That's true, and that makes sense for Lannister. Still weird for Stark with the whole.
Not when their gold mines stop working.
That's only in the fucking show.
Didn't they run out of money in the books?
No. Move on.
No, the Crown did. The Lannisters did not.
Oh. Whatever. I can't wait for them to blow shit up in the books. Let's move on.
Yep. So, who is up with the next house?
Wow. Y'all just left me with some doozies.
Enjoy.
Okay. So, I get Greyjoy, which also used to be a favorite of mine, and now a faction I despise. So let's start with the Lordsport Fisherman. He is a loyal, non-unique Greyjoy character at 3 cost with a power icon and 2 strength. He is the ally and merchant traits. Wait. Reaction. After you marshal Lordsport Fisherman, add the bottom card of your deck to your hand.
So that's non... loyal card advantage, assuming translations are right.
It's a loyal card.
It is?
It is loyal, yeah.
Oh, you said non-loyal.
Did I say non-loyal?
Yeah.
Well, that sucks.
So I was like, wait, that doesn't sound right. Like,
well,
that's
I suck.
Basically draw.
And he's not a translation. We've got actually...
No, that's English text. I just suck at looking at symbols.
That's why I wish it said loyal.
When you've been playing Thrones for 800 years and you get old at it, I guess it's harder to look at cards, those little images.
Oh man, so many shots fired.
So
I'm not meantime. Even sure if that was a shot. Okay, whatever. We'll go with Kings of Salt and Rock. It is a hold
I think
on.
That's what me, I just gave you. I just gave you the King of Salt.
Let me just make sure that I get this right. It is a non-loyal attachment, and it is 1 cost. It is unique. It is a title. And it is Ironborn character only. Attached character gains the King trait and the keyword Pillage. Reaction. When an attachment or location is discarded by Pillage, attached character gains 1 power.
That sure is a card they printed.
Yeah. I mean...
it exists.
These are both cards.
Oh, see, that I don't agree with. I like the first one.
Lordsport Fisherman is something that I think Greyjoy wants, but the other one is a card that will be used for proxies on occasion.
I mean, at the moment, the Fisherman is effectively just draw 1 card when he comes into play, right?
Yeah. No, he's fine.
Wait. It depends how important the King trade is, because like. You might have no choice but to play King of Salt and Rock.
Fair.
King shit coming with.
You may need to kill that Renly.
Actually, no. Here's the thing. No, you're just playing. You're playing for tiebreakers.
I mean, that's not an impossible thing. I mean, like, it just to me, what that card is it's signaling that Pillet, like Aaron. This is something we've talked about, I think, in the last couple of review episodes, which I think have been Will, Aaron, myself, and before. Luke, Tommy, and we talked a lot about new themes for houses, and I think this is continually signaling that Pillage, while not new, is definitely the secondary theme that Nate and Danny want to push for Greyjoy. And, you know, Which, now that the tiebreakers are out in the wild and we've actually seen highly competitive top-tier games decided by the tiebreaker, it's...
Well, so here's the thing that kind of bugs me as far as pushing those themes go, though. Like, if you're going to push this alternate win condition, or even if you're going to consider that in light of the tiebreaker, like, I wouldn't push it in the house whose, like, main theme so far seems to be to rush to the primary win condition. I would have that in, some other thing, like work it into Baratheon's dominance theme or something like that. Yeah, or even Lannister.
Because Lannister gets every faction's mechanic.
No, yeah. Lannister has pillage.
Yeah, they've got the...
That's
the
what I'm saying. We get every house's mechanic.
Well, that's because we don't have any mechanics of our own. All of the other houses also feature
ambush.
We're just the jack of all trades. No, ambush. Other houses have ambush.
But we have jump. Martell.
Why are you guys using we to refer to Lannister? Are you siblings and have something to tell us?
Yes.
Maybe.
That's why we've both been playing since the CCG.
Oh. One of you runs off with Brienne and Tyrell for a little while. He comes back and glancing askew.
This is... Love it. I don't even know right now.
I kind of think, though, that the problem that the fishwright, is that what it is called?
Fisherman.
Fisherman.
I wish he had the fisherman trait. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. He's in this, he's like, I wish he was 2-1.
Yeah.
It's like the 3 cost slot of Greyjoy is already kind of full.
Is it?
Yeah, you're running those 3 guys, and 3 is like kind of
those 3 guys at 3.
The priests.
Yeah, the priests. Yes. That's like in my head they're the 3 guys.
I like that. At the 3 cost spot, you're running the 3 guys.
Like
yes, you
like,
are, Roy. Yes,
immediately, they're 3 cost, 2 icons, 3 strength with the boost. But anyway, in my brain, that's
Roy. You should have to drink for that.
I actually my beer is empty, so. The first natural break, I will go get one. Another one.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm planning on the same thing.
I just feel like the problem that this guy has is he's just really awkward to fit into Greyjoy decks because he's a monocon, because he's in the 3 cost slot. And that sort of pushes my assessment of the card down a little bit, even though it is kind of card advantage when Greyjoy desperately needs card advantage, and it's Claim Soak when actually kind of Greyjoy needs Claim Soak. Which is a
does Greyjoy desperately need card advantage?
I think it does. I think there's definitely situations where Greyjoy has a pretty solid board, but has an empty hand. At least when I'm playing Greyjoy, and it has been a while since I played Greyjoy. But you're okay with the board, but you can't like push that board advantage because your hand is like 2 cards that are situational, like very situational. And just you just need to cycle your deck a little bit more. And if you don't see Great Kraken. Or the reader.
But you're not. But you're not cycling your deck because you're picking off the bottom.
Well, yeah. But I mean, here's the card.
Dude, I hear that Sean Emberley really loves Greyjoy Monocon powers.
D.
Yeah. It's a D. Like iron.
You have the 2 card combo in Greyjoy Rose.
So Greyjoy is
false banner to line.
I mean, like, yeah, I feel pretty bad about this. I'm gonna reserve a slight like Shaga nod. I'm gonna keep my eyes peeled for the fisherman.
Oh,
if we ever get anything that lets us like
just reprint Iron Victory
pile on the bottom of the deck, then I'm gonna be running.
I mean,
back
mean,
the
theoretically, there's kind of a Shaga.
Right now, it's
Greyjoy Rose deck around that card, right? That you run the 0 cost event that lets you move cards to the bottom of your deck and on the top of your deck.
Okay,
right? So you
I still think
focus
I would want
your draw,
to
and then you use this to pull the card out of the bottom of your deck. So I mean, there's
something.
Because Tyrell doesn't have other 3 cost characters that I'm more
there
interested
you go.
In playing.
Well, it wouldn't be in Tyrell; it would have to be in Greyjoy. This being loyal.
Yeah, I would much rather play a couple like. In that cost slot, even in a banner.
Okay. So rating, okay. Rate it, folks.
I'm with you.
I agree.
It's a D.
D plus.
If someone disagrees, and everyone's going first next time because I'm disagreeing.
Just all right, fine. Possible. It's a D minus.
Nope. You suck, guys. Go, Will. Read us Targ.
Wait. Actually, it can't be back to me already.
It's definitely back to you. Start reading, Will.
God, I didn't get any of my.
I'm ready.
I didn't get any of my favorite houses.
I'm ready to read. I'll read. Because it's my turn, technically. All right, so we have two Targ cards. First is a non-unique character, Devoted Blood Rider, 3 cost. It's a monocon, military icon, 2 strength. Blood Rider, surprise, surprise. Dothraki, even more surprising. And its text is, each Blood Rider character you control gets +1 strength. And then the final Targ card is a 3 cost. Both of these cards are non-loyal, by the way. Non-loyal event, Blood of My Blood, and it is, again, 3 cost. It's a challenge action. Search your deck for a Blood Rider character and put it into play. Shuffle your deck. At the end of the phase, if that card is still in play, return it to your hand. Well, I'm glad that these two cards were in the same pack, because it's Devoted Blood Rider is the card that allows the redundancy for you to run Blood of My Blood. It's a really good draft card. And in fact, the picture we have in Blood of My Blood, to be clear, is a really good draft card because Deck Tutor is really, 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 really strong in draft. Because I know, because I got owned by Dan Struhal a bunch playing draft games with him running Blood of My Blood. But I don't know if it's going to be that impactful in Joust, although it will lead to some fun Blood Rider decks. Devoted Blood Rider is a chud in a Dothraki deck. There's a really strong Dothraki melee deck that South Jersey Mike, who's a really great guy, piloted to the cut at Gen Con. And I think Devoted Blood Rider will slot in there, making your Aggo better and all that kind of stuff. So these are okay cards. They're firm, middle of the road. Blood of My Blood is probably a little overcosted. But yeah, they're cards that push a different theme than just Danny and Burn. So fine.
See, I do like the cards. Thought of Aggo, now that you bring that up, of searching him out while I have a summer plot and getting 2 challenges out of him before he winds up getting returned to my hand. That definitely has some appeal to me.
These are cards. They are cards that exist that you will play in one very specific deck. If that deck gets good, these cards are therefore good for that deck. If that deck does not get good, these cards are therefore bad.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have anything else to add.
I think
you guys rate first.
I did say C, and I just do want to hammer home that these are the cards that make, particularly the character, that make the redundancy of these Blood Rider synergy. I think they're now there. You can actually build a synergistic Blood Rider deck now. Whether or not that deck is going to be good in Joust, I don't know. But these are C cards, I would say, just in the vacuum.
I will say that Roy had a similar experience to you against Dan in draft, and he was my only loss in the draft. And, yeah, that was nasty. It's a C.
I'm gonna go ahead and shake things up a little bit on this one, and I'm gonna give this actually a B minus,
yeah,
based on the impact of this, not necessarily forcing, I suppose, but enabling people to actually build this other deck. Are these pieces? Is that deck going to be great in the end? I'm not necessarily convinced of that, but I think this does shake up and really give people, you know, another option to tinker with in Targaryen.
Yeah, that's where I was, too. I made my big, I'm going to change things up because I knew these cards were coming. That Dothraki location that came out in the core set that was terrible isn't terrible anymore.
Yeah, yeah. When you can stock your hand with Blood of My Blood.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Dothraki C, for sure.
So, I have B minus, maybe even a B, but I'm going to say B minus because I still think they're probably 1 card away.
I say C because I think they're average cards.
I think you're an average card.
That's a gross overestimation.
Now it's Will's turn.
For Martell, the other house I love. Here we go. Spear Maiden, Martell character. not loyal, 5 gold, 4 strength, military icon, ally trait. Reaction, after a Spear Maiden is declared as an attacker in a military challenge, choose a character controlled by the defending player. If you win this challenge by 5 or more strength, the chosen character must be chosen to fulfill the claim for this challenge, if able.
The chosen character must be chosen.
Yes.
That is a translation, so we don't know exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope it's chosen character must be chosen.
I just look forward to someone making a really bad semantic ruling with this card, because I feel it coming.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to hope that's just a translation thing. Though, off the top of my head, I'm not sure what better English phrasing there is.
Choose that character?
Yeah, probably.
That's my assumption. That's how, isn't everything phrased, choose that character?
Possibly.
Or choose a character, I guess. No, it has to be that for this one.
It may be that character must be chosen.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah. And then we've got Scorpion Sting, a Martell event, also not loyal. Reaction, after you lose a challenge, choose up to X Martell characters. Each chosen character gains renown until the end of the phase. X is equal to the number of plots in your used pile. I think these are fantastic tools for Martell. Spear Maiden gives a very interesting twist to pinpoint control, though with this whole kind of winning by 5 strength on a character body sort of thing, I kind of wish that was, I don't know, a Tyrell card to kind of emphasize strength matters.
I hear you can banner to Tyrell.
Yeah, there you go.
No, you can't. You can banner to the Rose.
That's true.
Yeah, that's fair. Scorpion Sting is like the Martell power grabbing event that I wanted. The one in the core set, was it Doran's Scheme or Doran's Game?
Game.
What's the name again? Game, yeah. I've never been particularly enamored of, but Scorpion Sting, I think, hits a much better, less specific point. Where I'm going to be able to close out some games by throwing
5 characters into challenges?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe not 5. I think that the sweet spot's probably more like 3. But
Doran's Game is something like 4 or 5 power usually.
Yeah,
if you're waiting that long. Yeah.
Lord of the Crossing card. Like, as a closer in Lord of the Crossing.
You're a closer in Lord of the Crossing.
I wish to close when I play Lord of the Crossing, so that is true.
Yeah. I just feel like I can afford to play Scorpion Sting earlier.
So, I have no idea if either of these cards are any good. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to make up an opinion in like 2 minutes just because I do that. But I have no idea. These need like some serious testing and like dedication to try and break. So, these cards might be really good, or they might be completely useless, and I don't think we're close yet to knowing.
I will give my assessment in monosyllabic meh.
Did you say monosyllabic?
And then, yes.
Like, but when you say monosyllabic, you're already not being monosyllabic, so you ruin the effect.
I will give my I will give my ratings in various tones of eh. First one, eh. Second one, eh.
Yeah, I think they're interesting. I think these are cards that, like, I wish we got more cards like this, that they're not like, just, this is good, you put this in decks, this is bad, you put this in binder. Like, I like that we're getting cards that might be good, but you have to build around them, you have to think how to use them, you don't just stick them in a fucking deck and go, good, or stick them in a binder and go, no look at. So, I'm gonna give them a B, because I think it's beautiful design.
Damn it, Aaron, I was gonna give Martell a B. I wanted to be the first one to rate these, and then make you guys second me.
No one else was going to go that high, but us, so it's fine. Roy and Luke are giving it a C.
I was going to give them C pluses, yeah. I think Spear Maiden is a really well-designed card. I think it's the kind of targeted removal that I think we should see more of, because at least it has clear ways to play around. And it's also, even though it has a win by 5 characteristic, like, or trigger rather, like, put to the sword.
But you cannot lie. What?
Yeah, but I
said like 3 times.
I did say like a bunch of times. Like, that's just what I do. I say that a lot. Like, I don't know why I do it. Like,
I thought that was the other coast.
But it's, I want to see more. If we're going to see more targeted removal in the game, I want to see it more like Spear Maiden, which has there's clear counterplay to her. There's still tricks, like she could be dumped in with Ariane and other things like that. She's good Lord of the Crossing, and she also doesn't immediately allow you to trigger her effect. She's not a 5-for-5, right? She's a 5-for-4, so you have to have another character or some trick or whatever, whatever. So that's a really well-designed card. Scorpion Sting, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Aaron is definitely right. Smarter players, better players than me are really going to have to test this card. But I think these are fine cards, but they're definitely like kind of C-plus cards because they just don't stand out and immediately scream good efficiency.
I'm giving these cards a flat C because I think that they're fine, but I don't see what builds they currently slot into.
When you've rated cards with people for years on end, you can predict their scores sometimes.
Years on end? I haven't even been here but like a few months.
You're like 700 years old, Luke. We established that earlier. Stop fucking
Jesus
lying.
Christ.
Speaking of Luke, you get to read 4 cards now, Luke.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh my god, I get to read the best card in the pack.
Can we just go one at a time really fast with these?
Yeah.
There's not a lot to say about most of them.
I get to read the best card in the pack, which comes up right now, which is a neutral character. He's unique. He's fat. He's riding a donkey. His name is Hapa. He is 2 cost, 2 strength. He has no icons. He has the companion trait. And shout out to Mickey. I know you love this card. He has the marshaling action. Kneel a companion character to reduce the next unique character you marshal this phase by 1. Then we have the God's Eye. It's a location, unique, 3 cost. Westeros traded. The God's Eye cannot be discarded from play. +1 gold, +1 reserve. And then we have Dissension.
Let's assume so.
Which is a neutral event. It is 2 gold. And it has the text marshaling action. Choose an ally character and discard it from play. And then we have the Battle of Oxcross, which is a plot. It is a 3 gold, 7 initiative, 1 claim, 5 reserve, war trait. And the passive ability, each character with printed cost 4 or higher cannot be declared as a defender during the first challenge you initiate this round. Okay.
All right, you guys talk for a while. Tell me when.
Hot Pie, I kind of hate. God's Eye, don't know what to do with. Dissension, okay, I guess, if you have the money. Battle of Oxcross has a place in certain builds. I'll move on.
Hapai is what, 1x in every deck?
Yeah, for the foreseeable future.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't disagree. I just really kind of hate that design.
I don't know. He's non-limited.
Neutral auto-include.
Neutral. Non-limited, he kneels himself, at the very least. If you're really in a tight spot, he's claim soak. I really don't see what the downside is. He is a firm B+A card. Like,
No, I'm not saying that he's bad. I just kind of hate that, like, that's how I'm supposed to get my money. Like, yeah. Cards like Hot Pie. You know, I'm dedicating character slots to Hot Pie. Like, give me a fucking break.
I mean, in many ways, though, Hot Pie is the design philosophy of 2.0 put into practice, right? He's a named, unique character that people want to play, and he has an impactful effect. At least he's
not a crappy one without a direct Nedley connection to that ability.
No, more important than that, like, we're already short deck space. We don't need neutrals that go everywhere anymore. Like, neutrals should probably be playable, but they should be playable within a niche, because neutrals that just go everywhere reduce the deck size from, like, 60 to 54 or 48 or whatever else. Like, if you have a certain amount of auto-include or near auto-include neutrals, because we're almost at a point where you functionally have to play Rattle Shirts or a deck that doesn't care about your characters, because they won't give us more attachment removal. You're probably running the 6 limited economy. You're probably running Nightmares, unless you're in Lauren Rosario, then you're running Henge Judgment. There's just a certain number of neutral characters, and your decks are smaller than they should be. It removes decision-making from the game. Hot Pie adds to that, and I think that's bad design. However, he's an A card. And, like, he's another one where if you think he's bad, I don't think you're paying enough attention to how to...
Hot Pie, in my opinion, is the scene at the end of Anchorman when he goes back into the restaurant after washing up, and he's like, I'll eat the entire hunk of shit. If I eat the shit, will you give me a steak? Like, that's Hot Pie to me. I hate him.
Maybe it's worth moving on to the God's Eye, then?
God's Eye is one of those weird cards. Like, what is this card trying to accomplish?
I can tell you what this card's trying to accomplish. It's trying to give a third Night's Watch card to this pack. That's what it's trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
I played in Night's Watch, and I think maybe give it a try in some Tyrell builds?
No. No.
No, you have the Arbor.
That's what I'm saying is I think I could see myself playing that in some Arbor builds.
What you're doing with your Arbor gold is playing the God's Eye this round. No, Will, please don't do that.
I think that Support of the People with this card isn't the worst play in the world.
No, it's also not a good play. But it's not
no, way. It's not a great play, but...
Look, it's in Night's Watch where you really want the higher reserve for shenanigans and you don't have the extra economy, it's not a bad card. I can't even begin to imagine the scenario, despite Will's bad idea, that I would play this in another deck.
Man, I want to be able to fill up my hand, try to leverage that extra advantage, particularly after Valor is available. It gives me more resources to help do that. I think it's worth me giving it a shot.
I guess it's further insurance as well that Night's Watch will have economy if Political Disaster ever becomes an answer to those wall decks, right? So you can save it's 3 locations, right?
Yeah.
Or is it 2?
No, it's 2.
It's 2.
You're thinking of fleeing, right? It's 2 locations, and so this third one, since it can't be discarded, you know, so you'll have a economy location, reserve boost, the wall, and something else, the Castle Black, right? So I can definitely see that it's a Night's Watch card, but I'm just not very interested in this card. I don't think it does anything of value, I guess you could say, even as a binder fodder. So I don't know.
It's a card.
It is a card. It's definitely a D card to me.
Can I do Dissension fast? Because this shouldn't take long.
It's a Lannister card?
No, it's Jack and Hagar proofing.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's very meta. Yeah. Meta dependent.
It there's enough other solid allies that it's not a terrible card. But like, it's really just like, hey, if Jack and Hagar sees playing every fucking deck because we like printing neutral cards that we shouldn't, run Dissension, another neutral card that we probably shouldn't have printed.
Yeah, I mean, Dissension also... Does Dissension punish decks that want the 7 cost reducer, which all the reducers are allies, setups that are kind of a little slow?
No.
That may not be able to flood the board?
No.
Not if you don't have the economy advantage. And if you're playing against that, like, that Tywin reducer setup, you don't have econ advantage. I don't think it's that good.
I also think it's a boringly designed card.
Well, like every other iteration
right now, or what? Littlefinger, and then maybe Jaqen,
and all the little one drops. I think are allies.
All the little one drops. Well, Theon. Yeah. Theon's not seeing a lot of play right now.
But the ones that are actually going to earn me some economic advantage out of that trade off.
Yeah. Look, it's Jaqen proofing. Like, it's genuinely designed as Jaqen proofing. I'm almost certain it hits Spear Maiden, which is a pretty good hit.
Yep. Any of the more expensive allies. There's a few other expensive allies. The problem is we haven't been doing a very good job recently of tracking.
It hits Ruth Bolton when he drops.
That's true. I mean, the thing
but
is, like,
marshalling action, you're dropping him with Harrenhal, Luke.
You will definitely have to be more aware of the ally trait than you have been so far in second edition. So, you know, why at least it adds, which
stop
is good.
Instructing me. How do you know I haven't been aware of the ally trait?
You haven't been thinking when you read a card, oh, that's an ally, I should keep that into mind when building my decks, like you did in first edition?
Since Sir Aris showed up in draft packs, I've been keeping it in the back of my head.
Okay.
It's weird because every other iteration of Dissension in this game has included ally and mercenary. And so I don't know why it's just ally now, other than the fact that, like, there were the nightmare stories of old Nan just making something a refugee and then bombing two characters. But I don't know, like, unless you have a ton of money, this card's just, like, okay at best.
Alright, last card, Balvox Cross, goes in one deck. The only deck it goes in is your Alvaro Agenda deck. Arguments?
Why is it going the Alvaro Agenda deck to ensure that you win that challenge by five or more?
Flip Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and also if you're trading into a different plot after your first challenge here, you don't care about the rest of Oxcross's text. You already got your use.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really high initiative, right, to ensure that you get to decide the tempo of the round?
Yeah.
The only other time that it would ever... Yeah, I don't even think... I mean, King Rob may be the only other character that it can really, really synergize with, but that's about it.
Cool. So neutrals, I'm giving them a... I don't know. Let's say a C+. I just picked a random grade.
Yeah, it's hard to rate them...
together.
As a whole, yeah. But that sounds fairly reasonable. Kind of average overall. Though I do want to note, again, acknowledging melee... I think Battle of Oxcross is a pretty decent melee option. Good initiative, and the potential to snipe through the challenge you need to win the game.
And the gold isn't terrible in melee.
I don't even know if that's a supported format.
It is not a supported format in 2016.
Hey, Will, actually, there's a legit chance I might be able to come to that tournament, so, yeah.
Hey, that's a good transition into you making that announcement.
Sure enough. So, there we go. I'm going to announce a little ditty that we've got going on down here in Missouri on October 1st, the Knights of the Long Summer event. Hopefully it still feels like summer a couple weeks into fall there, so we can claim it was prescient. But we're going to be having a melee tournament starting at 1 o'clock at Metagames Unlimited, which is a phenomenal venue. It's where the regionals and store championships in this area have been for the last umpteen years. Tons
since,
of space.
Since Luke was just a boy.
Yeah. He really actually was. And so we're gonna try and get folks out for that. I know quite a few folks lately have been more enthused about the melee format than Joust, despite FFG's comments on the nature of the format. So we're going to see if we can't get store championship-sized attendance at least. We're going to have more tokens as prizes, some deck boxes, and some custom stuff for it. So I think it's going to be a great time. And I would love for folks to go ahead and come on down for it.
And Will promises to do deck checks.
Whoa. I'm playing it. I'm not running it. We're leaving the deck checks to Carl.
Too real, Aaron. Too real.
Sorry.
We have a tournament this weekend. That'll be fun. It's the Fire and Ice format that I talked about last time I was on the cast.
Yeah, man, I hope that goes well. I'll be looking to hear more about how that actually shakes out.
Yeah, I was really, really planning on having Pack 3 out, or the box, to experiment with, and now since I don't have either, I have no idea what I should play. So, any of you or listeners, you should tell me what to play.
Sure. The deck that I sent you called Play That Fucking Deck Already.
That's true. I get two decks. I can't transfer copies of individual card titles over to the other deck, so. Including plots, just so you know. So
that's, including economy?
No. All the economy locations and reducers are all exempt.
Okay.
So, yep. I also want to complain about, the general, Midwest, meta in some ways. Like, there's, a few, really, really, really competitive players, and there's a lot of players, in general. And here in Indy, we have a lot of really fun events that I've talked about on the cast, and, last time, there was only 12 players, and we were really upset about it. And I hope that there's more this time, but if there's not, I'm gonna come on here and just, absolutely put everybody on blast and just, quit the game, because, it's bullshit that people don't come. Because, we go, here in Indy, we go to the store championships in, Cincinnati and Dayton and Columbus, and we go to Origins, and you know, we head up to Michigan and over to Illinois, and, it's bullshit that people don't come around here, so, yeah.
And Indianapolis is so cheap.
It's so cheap.
Party after the event at Casablanca?
It's a little far from our particular location, but that is a legit possibility.
You lost me. I tried to sell people on it. You lost me.
Well,
Casablanca's charms are only really great when you're staying in those hotels. Although my fair. Body still has not fully recovered from eating at Casablanca for a week.
Breadsticks and salad.
Terrible salad.
Well, I do have one other event that I wanted to take the opportunity to prop a little bit. I don't have a ton of details on it since it's not an event I'm running, so hopefully we can get some more for that. But I know that the Iowa City Meta is holding an IO Worlds event on Saturday of World Championship weekend. And for some of us that couldn't get essentially an entire week off of work / get a ticket to Worlds.
/ don't want to give FFG your money.
Yeah, this will be the event that I'll be headed to that weekend. But, and I know there's going to be several strong players there. But here's the funny thing. The way the world schedule is, if any listeners out there are attending Worlds for Thrones and are a little bummed that they're over before the actual weekend, I would say come on down to IO Worlds and keep things going. It's sure going to still be a few hours travel south, but I think it would be pretty baller to have folks come down and just kind of continue the Worlds weekend.
Where's that at, Will?
It's in Iowa City, I believe. I'll have to get exact event details from them as far as what store it's at and start time and everything. So we'll try to make sure we've got that nailed down to advertise to folks next week or the week after.
Is it being organized by our beloved but wayward host, Kyle?
I think he does have a hand in it. I believe he came up with the pithy name. I mean, it's no Jen Kant, but it's pretty good. Props and slops.
I want to prop Will.
Okay, what for this time?
That's it. I just want to prop you.
Yeah, Will deserves all the props.
No,
Will,
shut up, Roy. Stop trying to jump on my props.
I'm seconding props. Your props.
No seconding props. My prop.
Fine.
See, Will, Roy hates you. He won't even fight for you.
Ouch.
So I'm gonna slop that whole conversation. That was the worst.
I'm gonna both prop and slop the second edition Facebook group. I'm not gonna say why, but I'm gonna do both.
Fair.
I want to prop something for real, and then I'm gonna actually just jump off. I want to prop Marvel Future Fight because that app is super fun, and it has it's a little phone app that has like a bunch of really, really cool and interesting Marvel characters in it. And I appreciate being able to like play for 10 minutes and get Wiccan and Squirrel Girl and characters I actually like, instead of being stuck playing Black Widow and Hawkeye for the millionth time for 17 hours. All right, bye.
No one wants to play with Hawk Guy.
No. And bows and arrows.
Hawkeye. Amazing.
They actually, like, the only annoying thing about Hawkeye in that game, he's actually not bad, is that they don't have the traditional purple costume.
One with the weird,
they have an alternate skin where you can play as Kate?
No. Hawkeye has gotten no attention in this game for whatever reason. Like, he's got, like, 2 movie skins, and that's it. But
not even the new costume, like the
nothing, like nothing. I'm pretty sure whoever made this game just doesn't give a shit about Hawkeye. Like, there's an alternate Doc Ock skin that's superior. There's Squirrel Girl. There's Squirrel Girl. There's Squirrel Girl. She's the best Marvel character. If you don't know that, now you know.
No way, Sentry.
No, I'm not. Although Age of
wait, Sentry.
I like Sentry. I thought that was a unique take.
Oh my god, I don't give any shits about anything any of y'all are talking about.
Okay, first off, Kate Bishop is the best Marvel hero right now. Secondly, Sentry?
His original miniseries I thought was well done. I don't necessarily want to spoil the twist for anyone that hasn't read it at this point, but...
20 years later?
Did
anyone read Age of Sentry? Am I the only person that read Age of Sentry?
Yeah, that one doesn't even ring a bell.
You're the only person in the world that read that shit. Nobody cares.
It was Silver Age Superman and Marvel. It was fucking insane and fun. It was Jeff Parker, and Jeff Parker's great.
Nice. Silver Age was a good time.
Oh, shit. We're doing our call on the other podcast. Bye, guys.
Oh, I should boot up Skype. So I will do a couple quick props first.
Wait, fellas.
Can I jump out? What happens if I just close this window?
It'll upload your file. Keep the window open, but you can...
Yeah. I was going to say, how about... Because it'll auto-upload... Shoot. Will it upload if I kick Glazer?
Mm-hmm.
His will upload if I kick him?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Aaron, it's been real.
All right, well...
Bye.
I'm going to... Like Glazer, I'm going to jump in a second, because I, too, have to go on the Second Sons. But I want to prop first Luke for being an excellent co-host and kicking off this new team that we're on quite well.
Okay. Well, Tommy... Gosh, Tommy... I don't know where that came from. Slops to me. Roy and Aaron had to run to go hit Second Sons. The team switch up kind of threw off recording schedules and everything.
I love that Second Sons was like supposed to be a recording on their off weeks. So slops to Second Sons for not adjusting.
Yeah, exactly. It should have adjusted. Second, it's right there in the name. They should be second.
Slops to Second Sons in general. It's an awful fucking podcast.
That actually, I think, is probably a slogan they could sell on a shirt. I feel like they've really embraced that kind of moniker, and I'd be willing to buy a t-shirt that said that, I think.
Yeah, well, and props to Second Sons because, like, we all love it for that reason.
Too true. Too true. Well, otherwise, let's see. Prop wise, I'm gonna throw out a prop to a book I'm reading now. I don't think I propped it last week. 12 Kings and Sherekai, kind of a cool pseudo Arabian setting. So it's a nice change of pace from the standard fantasy stuff I've been reading lately. Not super duper deep. I would say reading level feels more like a good YA novel, but it's nice. Still nice pacing and everything, so I'll keep you guys updated when I actually finish it. Also props that I'm back to watching Once Upon a Time. Good show. Kristen and I had kind of wandered off to watch a bunch of other things after we'd finished season two, so we're back now working on season three. And I gotta really applaud the kid that is playing Pan. Spoiler alert, by the way, listeners, if you're interested in that in the show and have not seen it. Okay, now I'll continue. Pan is totally a bad guy, and I gotta give this kid playing him props. He's not quite like Joffrey levels of just reprehensible, but like the kid does a really good job of making you feel like you're watching some kind of like psychopathic being in the shape of a like 14-year-old, but that whatever is underneath that skin is not human. And so, yeah, it's been good. I'm looking forward to getting all caught up on that show. How about you, Luke?
Well, you mentioned books. Props to Three Junes by Julia Glass. Fantastic novel. You should read it. It's fantastic. I'm going to say props to Butler University, which is where I got my graduate degree from. They just hired me as a part-time professor teaching two sections here in the spring. So
nice.
Really excited about that. I still get to keep my current job as well. So it's all looking up on that front. And props again two times in a row to CT. He's organized all of our local events for as long as I've really been playing Thrones competitively since I quit after the CCG, and props to him and his wife. They're just killing it. It's awesome.
Okay, well, I guess the final...
Oh, slops to campaign season. Slops to campaign season.
Yeah. Yeah, it is just one thing after another, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. You know, it's not worth getting political on the show, but it's something.
I just wanted to be very general.
Yeah. I mean, I think at no matter what side you're on, that it's a mess.
Slops to hot pie. And props to Mickey, because I agree.
Okay. Take your word for it.
Yeah, if you haven't talked to Mickey, you should talk to Mickey. He's cool.
Would you say he's so fine? He's so fine he blows your mind?
I would say that puts us dangerously close to a particular zone.
That is definitely the danger zone. And thus closes another chapter of The White Monk.
I don't want to come on her. I want to come on Roy.
Oh God! Wow. Well, hopefully I really hope that Aaron said this in a way that Will can cut this out. And
Will's definitely
in,
cutting that out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, easier to do that now that everyone has their own track. I can just highlight something somebody says and click insert silence, and suddenly that doesn't exist.
Yeah, there was a part of me that was kind of like having an awe moment listening to the last cast when Patrick was like, ugh, really glad to have a cast without Glazer. And you know what? I'm more sympathetic now.